Welcome to Press Coverage. I'm Theo Greminger, and at Press Coverage, I'm trying to bring you the sharpest guests and helping you find the edges you need to win in fantasy. And right now, it's all about the 2024 rookie class. And I'm excited to be joined today by a guy who's not only excellent at discussing the players for you dynasty managers out there, but also has a real beat on what the NFL teams are looking to do. And that's Cody Carpentier. I've podcasted with Cody a number of times, but this is Cody's first time in the chair here at Press Coverage. I am super excited to have you on, Cody. This is your busy time of the year. This is the time of the year where you really shine. All the hard work kind of starts paying off. You dropped your third version, I believe, of your rookie NFL draft this week. And I know we're dropping a NFL mock draft right here at Player Profiler. I think that drops today or tomorrow. So excited to see your stuff this time of year, especially. You're sharp all year long, but people love your takes on rookies.
I appreciate it, brother. I appreciate you having me on my first time here on Press Coverage. I've done a few shows of a Player Profiler in my time, I guess you could say. And I'm just happy to be back, happy to be doing a show with you. And like you said, rookie season, it's April now. And it's just a feeling, something, you know, I've been looking at these rookies for months, 5-6 months since going back to the college football season. But something about seeing that calendar click April and you're like, oh no, I got to put the belt on. I got to put the backpack on. I got to keep on grinding because we got 3-4 weeks and that's all we got. And so I'm excited and I love this time of year.
At the time we're recording this, we're 23 days away from actually being together on NFL draft week. And we're going to be streaming our NFL draft coverage right here on Player Profiler. Cody and Alex Dunlap of Roster Watch are joining us in our coverage. A lot of the names, you know, the Podfather, myself, Matty Keenwoom, Memphis Young, Bradley Stalder, we're all going to be in Detroit together streaming. It's going to be an awful lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. And Cody, why don't you let everybody know? Because, you know, people know you from Player Profiler. They see you here still in a smaller capacity than before, but you're dropping a lot of really, really strong content over at Roster Watch. You're also doing some really cool projects that I think people might not be aware of. Maybe talk a little bit about Orange Bloods and also the stuff you're doing with Matty Keenwoom, another Player Profiler standout.
Yeah, obviously I'm over at rosterwatch.com. That's kind of where all my base is right now. But I began at Orange Bloods a couple months ago. Orange Bloods is a Texas Longhorns affiliate, and I've jumped into the recruiting base. I've jumped into the college football base a little bit with Texas Longhorns. But the draftrankings.com is something that I got fired up here about a couple months ago, and we've got a branch of podcasts that come off of that with the Draft Rankings podcast being one. It's completely NFL draft-centric, completely prospect-centric. There's no fantasy. We don't say the word fantasy on that show. It's just NFL draft prospects, team building, team needs, etc. And then, of course, The Hurdle, which you can catch on the Player Profile YouTube channel on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And then it's on our Executives of Fantasy Football YouTube channel on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern time. So I do both. I do all three of those shows with Matty Keenwoom. The draftrankings.com, though, that's the new thing. That's what I'm trying to build as my little teddy bear and kind of become something. So I appreciate you giving me the platform to explain that.
Yeah, so the draftrankings.com, I think it's cool. I don't think it's cool that you don't say the word fantasy. We love it when you – I'm going to catch you slipping one time on there and find the word fantasy and then, like, retweet it or cut you up on a video. But I love that you and Matty are both doing, you know, a lot of stuff together. But then when you guys both drop your mock drafts, you see things slightly differently. Certainly our rookie draft rankings are dropping any day now. With our rookie guide, you can find my rankings, Cody's rankings, Maddie's rankings. But like you and Matty, I think a lot of people, when you podcast together with somebody so often, you start like kind of having some of the same ideas of players. And you and Matty, I think, do a great job of being able to disagree with one another, see things differently. And I think provide like two unique perspectives, even though you're podcasting with each other like five times a week now. This time of year, you guys definitely talk to each other more than you talk to your wives. And I probably talk to Matty about as much as I talk to my wife right now. NFL draft season, we got to get going. This is our rookie drafts are like 1 month away. And the NFL draft again is like 3 weeks away. So we don't have time to mess around, Cody.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what you bring back to Maddie and kind of what you explained there is 100% true. I think I do talk to him first off more than my wife. I think we do like 5 or 6 shows a week. So it makes sense. But also on top of that, I think one of the things that allows us not to have that common, oh, I do a show with this guy once or twice a week. And you know, he's like the only one I talk to. I don't have that. I do shows with a numerous amounts of people. I also talk to Maddie on the phone when we're not live. And that's when we are. He's building his mock. I'm building my mock. We're watching prospects. We're talking about prospects. And it is nice to have that person that's there to be like, yo, man, what is up with this game? Why does this guy look like this here? And he sees it one way and I see another way. I talk to Alex and sees it one way and all these other people, and they see it this certain way. You learn those things and you add those things to your process. You take things away from your process. And I think that's something that has allowed us not to fall into that trap of just going into a show and be like, hey man, you like Roma Dunze #1? Yeah, same, me too. And like, that's just not what we do. We go in with our own thoughts. We don't study them together, but we talk about them after we study them. And I think that is definitely something that differentiates us from if you just go on the broad spectrum of draft analysis or fantasy analysis. There's a lot of shows out there that people just, hey Theo, you like this guy named Rome? Me too. I like him just as much as you do. Like, oh, I like him more. Like, that's not what this is all built on. This is built on discussion. This is built on your research, your data-driven analysis, how you view things, all X, Y, Z. So that's what I think makes this whole game we play, which is fantasy, NFL draft, whichever avenue you are in. So it makes it so great.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I think that you guys also do a great job of, you know, it's a little bit of a people that drop, and I got into this a little bit this year because I was dropping my rookie content way, way earlier than I would have in years past. But a lot of times you kind of like get stuck in your priors where you're unable to kind of adjust to the new information. You get sort of take lock. I know you see other analysts making that mistake, Cody, but how much do does your process kind of change? Maybe not with guys like Caleb and Marvin Harrison Jr. at the top, but certainly when you get to like your second rounders, your third rounders, how different do your rankings look now than they might have looked like 2 months ago? How much change do you have?
I think it's positional. It's positional. I think when you are looking at the quarterback position, and I was listening to Mel Kiper break this down on the Rich Eisen show a couple weeks ago, where he basically said, you know, it's a gut thing. There's teams that go to pro days, and he's labeled these big pro days, right? Jamarcus Russell's pro day, Zach Wilson's pro day, all these guys that had these great pro days, and they were overdrafted. And he's like, if you talk to a lot of these NFL franchises, they don't, like, a lot of them, a handful of them, go into those pro days with, like, a confirmed grade. And they actually, that pro day doesn't mean anything to them. Some of them go in the opposite. They want to see the guy in person. They haven't seen him in person. The GM goes, the GM sees him, things like that. That's going to change your process. For us, like on this side of things, when I'm looking at my fantasy rankings and moving these things up and down, it's completely positional driven. At the running back position, for example, this year, there was a big move because we'll talk about it later, but the depth of the class, the strength of the class, at one point I did have Braylon Allen #1. And the reason for that was you go back before the season, the college football season, he was the stud, 245 pounds, you knew he was going to be. But as the process wanes, he comes in, he doesn't weigh in. There's rumors of a 4.6. There's rumors of this. His feet are a little bit slow. He doesn't have the 1,800-yard season. He's got a 1,200-yard season, another 1,200-yard season. He didn't dominate. And then you see these other guys that are testing well. Interviews are better. Maybe you were worried about one prospect like a Will Shipley, and all of a sudden, guess what? He tested it exponentially, and he did enough in college, even though the team was bad. And so those things kind of – you have to take all of that stuff into consideration, and I think that's also what makes live events so important, the Shrine Bowl, the Senior Bowl, the Pro Days, the Combine. Being able to add that to your repertoire and being able to be live at those events, it's a game changer when you're talking about ranking these guys, because like you said, you can get – stuck to a confirmed prior. If I just watch tape and I got all tape done in January, guess what, Theo? What am I going to move? Why am I going to move a prospect? Athleticism. That's it. You're going to get these numbers at the combine or the pro day. You're going to go, that guy ran a 4.3. Move him up. But if you're just going based on film, you're not going to move the guy ever. You're going to rank him and you're not going to move him. And if you do move him, it might be just based on, well, I had a conversation with some guy on Twitter and this guy on Twitter told me and I'm an idiot. That's the wrong process. The process should be taking every single phase of the process, college football, interviews, testing, what you're hearing from NFL teams. All of these things need to be into that process. And that's why it stays a Bayesian process throughout at everything, because you always get new information and more information. And the more information you get is the better information you get, the more information you get, however you word that, it only can continue to help your process.
No, I love it. And you know, you bring up, you know, using film during the regular season, you bring up being able to see some guys in person. You've always done really strong coverage of the Senior Bowl. This year, we saw a bunch of guys, like you said, at the Shrine Bowl that are kind of hot names. A couple guys you're going to talk about later in the show, and a couple other guys like, you know, Jaden Sheridan, who did a really good job down there and are now, you know, kind of known names to fantasy managers. But when you look at statistical information on players, Cody, is there sort of stats that stand out to you or sort of metrics? Like, are you a firm believer in looking for guys with like an early breakout? Do those sort of things kind of weigh in your process, or is it sort of like a take every player differently thing? What kind of makes you tick when you're trying to evaluate these guys for fantasy football?
For receivers, it definitely starts with yards per route run. It's one of the most translatable statistics. I'm looking for that breakout. You have a little more hesitance when you see a guy like Xavier Leggett from South Carolina, who doesn't do diddly squat till year five, and then he goes nuclear. You're like, okay, well, is this guy a late bloomer? Is this really what he is in year five? Is this going to translate to year six being a rookie in the NFL? Is it going to translate immediately? Or when he gets to the NFL, is he going to translate back to that first year in college? Because that's kind of the thought you have with breakout. If you can break out at 18 in college, you're probably going to break out at 21 in the NFL. If you're not going to break out in college till 22, how do we know you're not like going to be 26, 27 before you even have the wherewithal or the nuance to win in these routes? So that's one thing for sure is breakout. You know, you want to look sub 20. You want that yards per run to be above 3.00. That's just a few of the things. The athleticism, a lot of people on the internet will tell you it's not important, but I think it is important to a certain degree. And then just really film. There's some things in route, like I mentioned before, route nuances of that's more so crispness. Watching these guys live is a big change, a big difference maker that I've learned the last even 3 years, where if you just solely watch a guy on film, there's some things you're not going to catch. And some guys this year you can talk about is Troy Franklin. Troy Franklin on film looks like a dirt nasty route runner. Not quite the Devonta Smith level because it's not as crisp and clean, which in hindsight will tell you, well, that's the problem that we found out at the NFL Combine was the gauntlet wasn't clean. The routes throughout the whole night were terrible. But on film, it looks fantastic, right? Whereas the opposite, Jamari Thrash on film from Louisville looks not good. He looks like a basic below average wide receiver. But then in person, you're like, this guy's got some nice double moves. He's clean. He's not great, but he's above it. He's better than what you expect that Jamari Thrash to be. So those are definitely things at the wide receiver position. The running back position, kind of just look at that. You're looking for like a couple thousand-yard seasons. I think the peak is I think you wish to have two, if I remember right, from the breakout finder algorithm. And then I get a little worried with guys like Ray Davis that are 24, 25 years old. But at the running back position, age is starting to become something that doesn't really matter. And opportunity is just king in that stance. And if this guy's got tread on the tires like a Ray Davis does, there's going to be tread used in the NFL. And he's really looked at as a mature back. So there's always avenues for these running backs.
I love some of the things you said. I completely agree with you on age and the running back position. I think that's completely overrated. Do we like to see a guy come in the league at 20 and do it? Of course, it's definitely something that we'll give as a positive. But if a 24-year-old's ready to come in and handle 150 carries, then it is what it is. The windows are already smaller. And I love what you talked about with the early breakouts. I think the early breakouts, to me, it's a if I can come into a big SEC program or Big 12 or ACC program and see a guy contribute as an 18-year-old, it doesn't only mean that they're physically ready at a young age, but it also means they're mentally ready at a young age. They're able to take in a lot and just step out and go against men. I think that's always something I like to look at. And we're going to dive in a lot into this 2024 class, Cody, but everybody who steps into this press coverage chair, we're like a month away from like redraft season, but I still want to go take a little time machine and go back to 2023. I can remember, you know, last summer talking to you so much about, you know, where guys were at, guys were bullish on. I remember having player debates with you, and, you know, we put a lot into it. And I know throughout the season, you're putting a ton into the weekly content, but what player, you know, was the biggest disappointment to you? A guy maybe you were bullish on, or maybe you simply expected a lot out of, that just wasn't there this past season?
I'll be honest with you. This one might catch some people by surprise, but I I'm going to keep these mostly rookies and sophomores. These being the sophomores, obviously. Kendre Miller, as the season got closer and closer, I believe he got up to, I want to say it was like round 8, I think is like the earliest I think I saw him or took him. Mostly it was like round 10, 11, 12 was where he would fall. But it was like him and Roshan, and you could even lump Roshan into this to a certain extent, but he had opportunities and got hurt. But Kendre Miller, who didn't actually do anything throughout the NFL pre-draft process, then got the camp, finally got some opportunities, I want to say late in August. And then as the season went on, there was just injury after injury in that backfield. And Kendre was either like got hurt, or he was in there for like a carry or two. And you're like, just right there, you're like, dude, this is like the nuts opportunity. Kamara's contract's like ballooning the next couple of years. If Kendre could just cement himself as like a guy, there would be no worry going into this 2024 class draft or future of like, oh, they're going to potentially add somebody else. Or Kendre, you know, after 2 years of disappointment, it's a lot easier to cut a guy after 2 years of disappointment rather than hold on to him in hopes that maybe in year three at the running back position, he could be something. Like, the opportunity was there for Kendre. And in season last year, definitely a guy I got overweight on. And I kept pushing up the ranks and pushing up the ranks and pushing up the ranks. And I'm going to be honest with you, at this time last year, I had he and Jahmyr Gibbs graded side by side the NFL draft, which is, like you mentioned a minute ago about the running back position, it's a failure on my part because Gibbs was a guy around that 200-pound marker that's like the only thing I was worried about with him was the utilization inside the tackles in the NFL around the 200-pound mark. Bet money he played sub 200, and you saw the speed just as I did, Theo, with the dynamism that Gibbs brings to the table. And we knew that. I knew that. But I put Kendre up in this conversation, and he was 100% one of the biggest disappointments as a rookie and is a seasonal guy that, like I said, I was way overweight on.
Yeah, I was loving all those tiny backs and the Kendre Millers, you know, the Gibbses and the Devon Achanes. Those guys were doing it last year, and the kind of the bigger backs that I think the fantasy community dove into Kendre Miller. They also dove into Tank Bigsby. There was a period of time where Tank Bigsby had that sort of hype train in August. A lot of people were drafting him in like the 10th round. You could have taken Raheem Mostert instead of Tank Bigsby in a lot of these high stakes leagues. So you just never know. You know, we're going to have a lot of hits, but certainly, especially when we're talking about like contingent upside, when we're talking about handcuff running backs, there's definitely, there's going to be some misses, but shooters shoot, and we're going to continue to shoot, Cody. And it's not all failures. Who's a guy that was a big positive surprise for you last season? Maybe a guy that you were on low key, maybe one that you were saying this guy's, getting drafted too low. And I'll give you a hat tip, Cody. Like a couple of years back, I remember I'm with you in Las Vegas, and you're telling me how Amari Cooper is this fantastic value. Amari like slid down to like the 8th round. I remember I would draft Amari Cooper, and I like wouldn't even tell people I drafted Amari Cooper. It was like a structural pick.
You can't.
And I'm like, whatever. Yeah. I was like, they're like, who'd you take in the 7th round? I'm like, gotta go. But Amari Cooper crushed it. And I remember you were all over him. So you're not just looking at rookies here. You're able to kind of look at ADP and all that sort of stuff. Who was a positive surprise for you, Cody, or a guy that, had satisfaction because you were on him and he played well, or simply a guy that you were just so impressed by his quality of play last year?
I'm going to be honest with you right here. So I was at Player Profiler for almost 5 years, like over 4 years. And the amount of times that I would go on to a meeting on a show or something with Matt, and he was pretty high on DeAndre Swift. He had DeAndre Swift pumped up there in the top 5 in Dynasty for a long time. And I was like, man, this guy's not good. You don't want this. Stay out. And I just stayed out forever. I go on any show and tell people DeAndre Swift's the most overrated running back in football. And I can't remember offhand, Theo, completely what it was that hit me last year, or the reason why. I think it might have just been being in that backfield and being kind of a clear cut, knowing what he was. But I bumped him up to, I think this is a guy that I had like RB 17, 18 in Dynasty for like the couple years. I bumped him up to like RB 8 or 9 in late August or early August, whatever it was. And I'm doing shows with Alex, Maddie, and I'm telling these guys this, and they're like, kind of like what you just said, like the Amari Cooper thing. It's not a cool thing to now be in on Swift. And they're like, DeAndre Swift, what are you? Wait, he's done. He's toast. He's gone. He's a couple weeks away from nothing. And what did we see? We saw a 1,000-yard season. We saw him. He did get banged up a little bit. Did miss a couple of games. But the games where he was healthy, where Cam Jurgens was playing guard for the Eagles and that entire offensive line was healthy, we saw some big games out of DeAndre Swift. He finished with 1,000 yards on the ground, RB24 overall in points per game, RB20 overall, I think. So it's not something I'm going to like say I was like 100% right on. But I will say I finally jumped on that one, or maybe I called the train back. Like the train was gone, and I said, hey, come back, pick me up. And that type of a situation. So DeAndre Swift, I'll take the surprise on Swift. Is I really don't know what hit me the one day in early August or whatever, and I was like, I got to get out on DeAndre Swift. So that's a non-rookie for you.
There you go. And I don't hate the player, hate the ADP. DeAndre Swift, when he was up there, yeah, you know, Cody didn't want to mess with the dead zone. But when you start seeing those guys with that sort of potential opportunity in the eighth round, and you just jump on it. And it's funny, you know, you look back in time to last summer. It was sort of a teammate arbitrage play because the Rashad Penny hype was like at a fever pitch. And then there was the Kenneth Gainwell hype. You know, some people, Player Profiler, were a little too hard on Kenneth Gainwell, not to be naming names there, Cody. But let's also talk about 2024, because we're here right now. It's April 2024. We're about to have the NFL draft. If you could know the final stats of any single player in this upcoming season, who would it be, rookie or veteran?
I think this is going to go right into this conversation we're having right now. And that is, you brought up Amari Cooper. I brought up DeAndre Swift. If there's one guy at this current stage that I could give, that you could give me the statistics for him in 2024. And I think is, I don't, like, do I get to know these statistics, or does everybody get to know these statistics?
And everybody. I mean, well, no, it's really for you. It's for your draft process. Cody, take this any way you want.
So if just I get this, I 100% want to know what Calvin Ridley's 2024 stats are. Because I low-key love the Ridley thing, because he got paid. He's almost 30. And everyone's going to say, he's over the age apex. I did the show with Matt last week. I did the Mind Imagine. Go watch it. And he's like, age over the age apex. And I think one of the questions, he didn't ask me this question, Matt, if you're watching this, you didn't ask me this question, but this was on the show sheet. He said, and I quote, in the show sheet, you know how big the show sheets are, Theo.
Oh, yeah.
Calvin Austin or Calvin Ridley in 2024. That was a question on the show sheet. And he didn't answer it. And I was ready to melt that showdown if he would ask me that question. So I want to know what the Calvin Ridley stat line is in 2024, because wide receiver 36 right now on Underdog, 61st overall. I'm eating that up. And
oh yeah,
I don't see. I can see a failure, but I don't see. How do I want to word this? I 100% see an avenue for Calvin Ridley to crank out 1,400 receiving yards in 2024.
I'm glad
I want to know if that's true.
I'm all over Calvin Ridley. I love that you're on Calvin Ridley. Last year, Calvin Ridley steamed up to like wide receiver 12 in ADP when we got to September, and he was overpriced. Then people were almost angry that they paid wide receiver 1 prices for Ridley, and he had a slow start to the year. But when Christian Kirk went down, like, Ridley ends up being wide receiver 18 on the season. He had missed basically two straight seasons of football and was targeted 135 times by Jacksonville with target competition, with Travis Etienne, with Evan Engram, with multiple guys that you know they wanted to get involved as well. And he had 25 red zone targets. So at the end of the day, Tennessee's going to give him every opportunity to put up wide receiver one stats. I completely agree with you. I've taken way too much Ridley in underdog. So we'll see, Cody. Hopefully we're on the right path here with Ridley. It's like okay to like Ridley now. Again, don't hate the player, hate the ADP. But we're going to dive into this 2024 rookie class. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to dive into this class. We're going to talk about some must-draft players for Cody and I. We're each going to give you five names that we think can help you win your rookie drafts and guys you should be targeting as much as possible. We'll be right back.
Hey, you know, people always ask me, what's the World Series of Fantasy? What's the Super Bowl of Fantasy? And it's easy. It's the FFPC. Their signature Players Championship has a $6 million prize pool. And their best ball leagues start in February. And they're the answer to so many questions. Hey, what's the best place to get a Dynasty Orphan? Well, you can adopt a Dynasty Orphan at the FFPC right now. There's more orphans at the FFPC than anywhere else on the internet. That's why we partner with them. So if you want to play fantasy football for low, medium, high stakes, you love Dynasty, you love best ball, you love seasonal leagues, all types of fantasy footballers need to go to the FFPC. And remember, use promo code UNDERWORLD. Promo code UNDERWORLD gets you $25 off your first team. Promo code UNDERWORLD, $25 off your first team, no matter what the format is, at the FFPC. Go get it.
Welcome back to Press Coverage. I'm Theo Greminger, joined by NFL draft and rookie draft expert Cody Carpentier. Cody, we talked a little bit about your evaluation process, your film, the analytics, and now it's time to dive into the players. Let's talk about this 2024 rookie class as a whole. You know, last year, we had unbelievable enthusiasm about the running back position. We sort of looked at it as a transformative year because we knew Bijan Robinson was going to immediately be the RB1 in Dynasty and probably a first rounder in redraft. Of course he was. A little bit of disappointment, but he's still right back in RB1 discussion. Then you also had Jahmyr Gibbs drafted very, very early. Then we also had a number of tight ends drafted, on day one and day two. So we sort of were able to identify these transformative positions. Certainly the quarterback class beat expectations last year, and the wide receiver class had some big hits, but remains to be seen, like long-term, how effective that class is historically, but certainly more positives than negatives. But when we look at 2024, the two positions that are standing out are quarterback and wide receiver. If you had to pick which of these two positional groups has a bigger impact on fantasy football as a whole, which would it be? We potentially could see four quarterbacks drafted in the top five overall, and we could potentially see a record-breaking number of wide receivers in the first round. So both of these positions are going to make an impact, but which one will be greater?
I think that's a very interesting question because the quarterback position, like you mentioned, has that high-end talent and has a good amount of depth. Out to quarterback 8-9, where you're looking at guys like Joe Milton and Devin Leary, who people like out of Kentucky. And Milton, of course, is just a super athlete who people have said, if you liked Anthony Richardson last year, there's no reason you shouldn't like Joe Milton this year. Milton, right now, as it stands, looks like a back end third, early fourth round NFL draft pick, but he's got a nuclear weapon attached to his arm. All the way up to, of course, the top four, like you mentioned before. And then in between there, you have guys that I think are just good pros, guys that can get into a system like Spencer Rattler and will be able to play for 12, 13, 14 years. Like, there's no reason Rattler can't be a Derek Carr. You look at a Penix. There's a lot of hate coming towards him. There's a little bit of love, but it's very quiet. It's almost like it's forbidden to like Penix at this stage because so many NFL teams are saying all he can do is shoot three-pointers. Can't make a layup. Okay. So, yeah, your process has been well over the last 25 years in evaluating these quarterbacks and telling us what they're going to be. Not. Right? You've heard this like, oh, if Peyton Manning's name was Peyton Jones, he'd be a third round pick and Ryan Leaf's the best prospect. No, like we've seen this year after year after year after year at the quarterback position from the NFL and what they've told us. Penix, if we're being honest, Theo, right now, he's the one I'm scared the most about. I'm scared that he's going to be really good. That's what I'm scared of. And him sitting there at like in that QB 4, 5, 6 range, it's a scary place to be. And that just tells you the depth of the quarterback position. Yes, we could have two guys in the top four be duds, and that could be landing spot dependent. Everyone feels good about Caleb in Chicago, and if Minnesota trades up, Minnesota feels like whichever quarterback they take is going to be good. What about the other two? We don't know. At the wide receiver position, that's where I'm going to go, though. The wide receiver position, Theo, is so sick deep. It's disgusting. It's a position that this year, and it's felt like it's gotten better each of the last 4 years this wide receiver group has. This year's class, and I've said this on multiple shows, you can scroll down here, and I don't even feel good saying this out loud because it's guys that I really enjoy watching, guys I think are going to be good pros. Anthony Gould, Oregon State, my wide receiver 31. This guy is good enough to take a KJ Osborne's job in 2 years. That's the depth we're talking about right now. We're looking at Jordan Whittington, wide receiver 33 from Texas, a guy that is going to make a team, as first off, going to make a team. 24 years old, four-star prospect at Aquero, Texas, played at Texas for 4 years, had injuries. He's got the athleticism. He's the definition of what you want in the locker room. Guys like this, Isaiah Williams, transferred from quarterback to wide receiver, went for 1,000 yards his first year as a wide receiver at Illinois. Broke the record for rushing yards by a quarterback at Illinois, followed up the next year by going for 1,000 yards receiving. Doesn't make any sense. Marcus Rosemay, Jack Saint. I'm just listing guys outside the top 30 that make this class so disgustingly deep that it's going to change. You know, we've talked about the last couple of years. Oh, this class is deep, man. There's, you know, 15, 16 dudes. This year, there's like 35 dudes that can make rosters. And what that exactly does is it forces the hands of Allen Robinson's, Devontae Parker's, KJ Osborne's, Brendan Powell's, you know, Shy Smith's, Terrace Marshall's, guys like this, that all of a sudden it's like, nope, I would rather have Jermaine Burton. Nope, I would rather have Josh Cephas. Get out. Like, that's what this class is going to do to the NFL and to fantasy football.
I love the take, and I agree with you. I think this is like the big takeaway if you're a dynasty manager listening to Cody talk about this wide receiver class is it's time to take value. Your wide receiver three, the guy on your roster that's being treated like a wide receiver three on the market, a lot of these guys are going to get nuked. Wide receiver threes, wide receiver fours, like real dudes are not going to get nuked. I'm not of the opinion this is the time to go and just get rid of like the Jordan Addisons, the Zay Flowers, because somebody's just going to pass them by. But it's those fringe guys that have value in dynasty. These guys coming in the league, you have a number of wide receivers who are going to get the draft capital and are going to get the opportunity. And when you have more and more of these wide receivers that are just filling out your roster with youth, then you have the opportunity. I'm not saying you're going to have a Puka Nacua situation, but you're going to have a bunch of situations with guys like Trey Palmer's impact last year, where he simply just fills in as like a wide receiver three type and passes guys on the depth chart. There's a lot of guys in this class that have that opportunity to come in and be day three picks and be like a team's wide receiver four, a team's wide receiver three, kind of out the gate. So I love that. I love your take on the quarterback position. Penix is, I agree with you. I think Penix has a shot, and I think he's worth taking shots on in best ball and also taking shots on, you know, in your rookie drafts because he's going to get pushed down. Certainly had a really good pro day. And like a guy like Bo Nix, I think is going to be an NFL starter, and he might be quarterback six in this draft class too. So Both positions I think are really, really good, really, really strong, and will have a ton of impact. But one position, Cody, that you touched on earlier in the show as the depth is starting to show a little bit in the running back class. But I think there's a lot of take lock in the fantasy community and the dynasty community about this not being an impactful class of running backs as a whole. We certainly don't have a Jahmyr Gibbs. We certainly don't have a Bijan Robinson or a Breece Hall. But I like this running back class a lot more than a lot of analysts. And I know you have some optimism about it as well. Who are a few running backs you like towards the top, and your general take on this running back class as a whole, kind of where we're at right now, and the way the NFL teams are viewing these guys?
Yeah, the thing is, the way the NFL teams are valuing them, first off, is the broadest thing you will hear maybe in the whole draft this year. And this is dating back over the last couple of months. This has been a continual thought, is that you ask a bevy of teams, a bevy of scouts, a bevy of people in the space, who's your running back one? You hear literally 8 different names. Literally, which is wild. You haven't heard that in a decade at the running back position. And it shows you, one, the lack of top-end talent. There's no, like, it's clearly of the big four, of quarterback, tight end, receiver, running back, it's clearly the weakest at the top, because you obviously know you have Brock, you got Neighbors and Marv, you got Caleb and Drake. You know what you have. The running back position, with Trayvon Henderson going back to school, is a little bit of like, what do we have? Jonathan Brooks should have won the Doak Walker at Texas this last year, but he tore his ACL. So that's like a shit. That's an X on the position. We think he's nasty, but we don't know when he's going to be 100%. He says he's going to be ready for minicamp in June or July. We'll see what happens. But that does leave a lack of optimism for September 10th, right? Week one, which is important to the utilization of a running back. And you can work yourself down the top five, but I think really what the running back position is, if you'd ask me, you know, why do I have optimism? Why do I think that there's take lock? Why do I think it's underrated? It's because people have seen the top six guys all over, but they have gotten take lock into this Blake Corum thing as he's the best running back in the class because we saw it at Michigan and we're just going to fall back on that prior. No, he's the best college running back, so he's probably the best NFL running back. Not so fast. The problem I think everyone's missing is the Isaiah Davis is from South Dakota State. Big, nasty. Couple 1,400-yard seasons at South Dakota State, Division I AA. Dylan Lobb, North New Hampshire, small school guy. Can't be me. He can't be the best kid in the class. Tyron Tracy, he's checked all the boxes. Big 10, running back, former receiver, 210 pounds, ran sub 4.5, showing you he can do it at Purdue. Ray Davis, 25 years old, puke. Frank Gore Jr., he ain't Frank Gore Sr. Like, all these guys, Isaac Gorando, formerly Wisconsin, went to Louisville, ran a 4.3s. Like, there's guys down here that are very interesting that I've shown you. Cody Schrader, that transferred to Missouri, went for 1,000 yards, led the SEC in rushing. Kimani Vidal, people heard about him at the Senior Bowl. A couple favorites that really have gotten zero pub. You mentioned Jaden Sheridan earlier. Blake Watson, who played side-by-side with Jaden Sheridan at the Shrine Bowl. Blake Watson's from Memphis. Memphis has had some good running backs, I'd say, over the last decade. And then Michael Wiley from the Senior Bowl, who was the best receiving back at the Senior Bowl from Arizona, and he had a pretty good season there at Arizona, ran a 4.51. Really what it is, it's the middle depth of just dependency. And that's going to be running back 8 through 15. And it's going to be guys that make rosters. And in week 8, when X gets hurt or X sprains his ankle or whatever happens, guess who's going to step up? It's not going to be, Britton Brown from the Raiders. It may not even be Alexander Mattison from the Raiders. It could be Michael Wiley from the Las Vegas Raiders that steps up in week 8, and he's the starting running back. How many times have we seen that? Year after year after year, there's some rookie that was a 5th or 6th round pick, steps up into that role. And that's what this class is full of, dudes that are going to be drafted in the 5th, 6th, 7th round that are going to get opportunities to step up. It's nothing new. It just so happens that the top end isn't there. There's guys there, but they're just not quite at the top end level that we've seen from Saquon and Bijan, et cetera, the last couple of years.
So you brought up Jonathan Brooks, who I think we can all agree is an extremely talented player out of Texas. Be interesting to see if an NFL team takes him in the 2nd round. I think that would alleviate any fears of, you know, how quickly he can get back on the field if a team's willing to use that draft capital. I really want to see Brooks land on day two. I'll have a little bit of concern, Cody, if I see Brooks fall into like the 4th round, even though it seems like an arbitrary place, just because a team, you know, passes up that sort of talent. All those teams pass on in the 2nd and 3rd round that would scare me a little bit. I think he will go on day two. But if you had to bet on one of these running backs finishing as an RB2 in fantasy next year, easy. You're shaking your head, Cody. Okay, then lay it on us. Yeah. Who is the RB2? We've had 10 straight years of RB20 or better from a rookie. So it's going to happen again this year. Who's it going to be?
Will Shipley, 100%. 100%. If there's only one cat that ends up in the top 24, top 20, whatever, it's 100% Will Shipley. And that, not only because the pro day was great, but he has the pedigree. He's a great dude off the field. He did the things at Clemson. Clemson's regressed, but it's not his fault. It's a talent problem at the weaponry positions, and he was like the only weapon that they truly had the last couple of years outside of the quarterback, Klubnik, who had disappointed. But Will Shipley, 100%, can come in and not get comped to Christian McCaffrey, but get comped maybe closer to a Kyren Williams type. And he can do a Kyren Williams type of a situation and earn a role and be a guy that is like, man, that guy really is going to get 250 touches this year. Bang, 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 receiving, receiving, receiving. And Will Shipley's that cat. And if, like you mentioned, and I'm going to be honest with you, this is one of the reasons he got bumped up my rankings, is Maddie asked me this question. I was like, man, it's holding everything against me right now not to put Will Shipley third or second in my rankings right now. And he literally asked me, he goes, which one, he goes, out of this class, would it surprise you if he finishes as the RB1 if you look back in 3 years? I said, nope, done, moved him up.
I love that we're not having to compare Will Shipley to Christian McCaffrey or Danny.
People
Woodhead.
Did it out of high school, dude. It was stupid. I know.
Well, he came into Clemson and played right away as an 18-year-old on really, really good Clemson teams. And he was, you know, this is a guy that had nearly 3,000 rushing yards, caught a ton of passes. I love where you're at. You did bury a little bit of the lead here, Cody. That was going to be one of your must-draft rookies, but you're going to have to talk a little bit more about Will Shipley when we get to the end of the show. But I guess I threw you that curveball. Let's go with the quarterback position, though. Caleb Williams is going to step into a situation weapon-wise, which is one of the best we've ever seen from a quarterback being drafted at the 101. The Bears' offensive line has taken steps forward. They're certainly not the best offensive line in football, but 2 years ago, we were talking about them being one of the worst. We'd at least say that they have a middle-of-the-pack offensive line now, potential to be a top-10 offensive line with some of their younger players. So Caleb Williams gets a improving offensive line. He gets DJ Moore coming off of a career-best season for DJ Moore. Cole Kmet was a top-8 tight end last year, caught over 70 passes. Then Chicago goes out and signs DeAndre Swift, and they trade for Keenan Allen. The weapons are there. Caleb Williams does not have to deal with Justin Fields still being on the roster, and for whatever reason, they just hold him. The path is there. He's on the field day one. Where does Caleb finish in terms of redraft? Like, and I'm not talking about where to draft him. I'm saying, where does he finish? The season ends. He is quarterback what?
Caleb Williams finishes the season at quarterback 8.
I love that you said that. I'm just going to say he's absolutely a top 10 quarterback. Now, let me ask you this, Cody. The Chicago Bears' record for passing touchdowns is 29. Give a percentage chance that Caleb Williams breaks the record this year. Because it's not like we're asking him to come out and pass 30, have 35 touchdown passes and put up like Dak Prescott last year numbers. Like 29 touchdown passes with those weapons is... Can we give him a 30% chance, or is that too bullish?
I think if you would have phrased the question at how many touchdowns would Caleb finish the season with, I would give you – I kind of like a 32, 33 total touchdowns number. Total. You're telling me passing, though, right? 29 passing is the record?
I'm going passing, and I think people will take that. You think you already have him at 32, so, you know, talking about him falling in the end zone 5 times as a runner – as sort of an opportunistic scrambler, would you say that that's how you're seeing him as a running quarterback, Cody?
Yeah, I just think there's going to be opportunities for him to do that. So I think, you know, you brought up 29. I was going to say, if you would ask me, like I said, if you'd asked me the other way, I would have been 32, 33. I'll give you 58-60%. I'll give 58-60% on him breaking that record.
I love it. And I think if he doesn't do it as a rookie, I think he'll do it as a second-year player. And there's also a chance, Cody, that we're talking about Chicago using that ninth pick on an offensive weapon. They've had a top 30 visit with Roma Dunze. They've had a top 30 visit with Brock Bowers. Not what the Cole Kmet dynasty managers want to hear, but I don't think it's out of the question. What do you think Chicago does at 9 overall? Maybe just share what you have them doing in your most recent draft.
Yeah, if he falls to them, I think Olufashanu, who played with Caleb in high school, is the pick. I got some hate for this in my last mock. You can never have too many offensive linemen. You can never have too many defensive backs. Those are two premium positions. And in the NFL draft, when a guy like Fashanu falls to you at 9, you do it. There's always an option to trade back if they don't like what they're at. Edge is another position to look at. Historically, I don't have the exact number up. I need to get these numbers. But historically, I went back. I think it was like 12 or 13 years, and it only happened a few times that a quarterback had went in the top 10, and that team had a second pick into the top, I think, 15 or 20. And it had always been like quarterback DB, quarterback D-line. It had always been defense. Never has they double-tapped quarterback with an offensive lineman, quarterback with a receiver. I think the Odunze, the Bowers thing is like too cute. It's too perfect to put him into this situation where the Bears, I think, are properly rebuilding this team. It's going to be Fashanu. It's going to be Verse. It's going to be Turner. That's what I would venture to. If you give me those three guys for the Bears at pick 9, I would. If I could get plus money on that, I'd bet a hefty amount of money on it.
And just to clarify for the people that don't speak NFL draft and only speak fantasy who listen to press coverage, Cody's talking about Jared Verse, edge rusher, Florida State, and Dallas Turner, edge rusher, Alabama. We're not going to get to that's the end of the IDP talk here, Cody.
But you don't want to start talking about guards? Let's start talking about guards.
No, I don't want. I'll talk offensive tackles a little bit, but a shout out to Fashanu is really interesting because you brought up the high school teammates. Those two guys were high school teammates at Gonzaga in DC, and Caleb, like, we talk about how Caleb was able to get to Oklahoma and take over the job. Basically, Spencer Rattler was the all-world recruit. He transfers because of Caleb, but Caleb also started as a 14-year-old at Gonzaga, which is, a lot of people are going to, hate that I say this because it gets very regional on this, but I'll say the WCAC that Gonzaga's in might be the best high school league in the whole country when it comes to like guys in basketball and in football. So those two guys could be the first high school teammates selected in the top 5. A lot of things would have to happen. But the last time we saw high school teammates drafted this highly together was Alex Smith and Reggie Bush. So you have, Fashanu and Caleb Williams could really break some records during the NFL draft. And Marshawn Lloyd also from the same high school conference. So shout out to the WCAC. But let's stay at the quarterback position. Jaden Daniels, I'm projecting him to be drafted by Washington at 2 overall. Would you agree on that? Yes or no?
Yes. That feels like the hammer right now.
So I agree with you. It's Vegas is telling you the same thing. So Jaden Daniels gets drafted by Washington. He steps into a situation with a couple guys we know about, Terry McLaurin, Brian Robinson shown a little bit of improvement as a receiver out of the backfield last year. Jahan Dotson regressed a little bit. We see no Zach Ertz is there. Washington also has two second-round picks, which I could see them using one on a skill position player. But the main thing is we have Cliff Kingsbury running the Washington offense. We've seen Kyler Murray as a scrambling quarterback have success under Kingsbury. Certainly Kyler Murray could have success under any offensive coordinator, but Kingsbury didn't mess it up. We'll give him that compliment. Where does Jaden Daniels finish as quarterback blank this season in redraft, Cody?
I kind of like his ADP. He's at QB 18 right now, an underdog. I'll give you QB 20. I'm not overly optimistic about it. I do like the rushing upside. I think Washington's still a year away. They're spending a lot on these older guys in free agency. They're trying to turn and burn right away.
If Austin Eckler,
quarterback, it's a good process. Zach Ertz, that's just, but they're like, yeah, it's like they feel like great at additions, but also it's like, I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's the right time. I think they're still a little bit away. I think they got some girth to add on the interior, both sides, that could benefit this team. I'll give him QB 20, not as optimistic as Caleb.
Bobby Wagner, Austin Eckler, Zach Ertz. Seems like odd.
Combined age, 140.
Yeah, it seems like an odd choice for a franchise that's about to draft, a 23-year-old and just hand him the keys. Yeah. But, you know, Washington, they make some interesting decisions. Let's pivot over to the wide receiver position because there's a couple of polarizing players. We talk about the depth of the class. We've certainly seen a guy's, sprint up in terms of value, like Ladd McConkey. There's a couple of names that fantasy Xavier Worthy, certainly after his impressive combine, there's a lot of steam with him, but there's a couple of polarizing players, and we're talking about wide receivers with size. My first question to you would be Adonai Mitchell. This has been a guy where I think we're both bullish on him, Cody, but he's a little bit polarizing with some other analysts. This is a player that, obviously had two seasons at Georgia, transfers to Texas, leads Texas in receiving touchdowns in his only year on the Longhorns, played very well in the college football playoffs for three straight seasons, and then absolutely shreds the combine, runs in the 4.3s. I mean, everything about Adonai Mitchell at the combine, I thought that the steam there where analysts would start coming around, but instead it's been, he's almost getting punished for running so fast. People say, oh, I didn't see that on film. You know, where's that on film? He's not a 4.3 guy. You know, he's a 4.5 guy. He just, you know, this is a straight line speed at the combine. We're not going to, Adonai Mitchell could bust. Where are you seeing this kind of hate coming out for Adonai Mitchell? Is it warranted? Do you see any red flags, or do you think that the community is getting a little bit wrong in certain places?
I do think that the negativity towards him is somewhat questionable. It's kind of a double-edged sword running the 4.34 like he did, because his speed in game doesn't remind you of a 4.34. His speed in game shows you a 4.51, 4.52, 4.53, which is fine. We talked about the athleticism not being the most important thing at the wide receiver position at the beginning of the show. But like I said, I cover Orange Bloods, and I do shows with Alex, who also covers Orange Bloods, and is with me at Roster Watch. We watch a lot of Texas football. And Adonai is different. He wins in his own ways. And one of my favorite things about him is that even if he's shut out, you could go three quarters and this guy hasn't had a target. Maybe he's had a target, but he hasn't had a reception. And he's a guy you know you can always look at. Fourth quarter, 7 minutes left, he's got no receptions, and you're on the 22-yard line. Guess who is still going to get that back shoulder fade in the corner of the end zone? Guess who is still going to get the slant across the middle on third and seven in that situation? Adonai Mitchell, because he's going to catch it. Adonai Mitchell, because he's a professional wide receiver. Adonai Mitchell, because there's a reason he's caught in a touchdown in every single college football playoff game he's played in, all five or five. Does he lack some physicality? Yes. Is his frame a little slender? Yes. He's could use, 5-10 pounds. Could be. But when you look at George Pickens, who's almost a mirror in size, I think Adonai's gotten him by an inch in height, but he's got similar length and similar scrawniness, I guess, if you want to call it that.
I think that the skinny guys like being called sinewy.
I like that. But Pickens ran a 4.43 or 4.44.
Yeah.
And this is a 4.34. And Adonai openly said at the combine, he was asked about his speed, and he said, yeah, I don't really run full speed during games because I like to play the entire drive. I thought this was a very maniacal comment that he made, was that I don't run full speed on all my routes. And that's like a why not? And it's because I like to play the whole drive. Like you'll see in the NFL, you these 13, 14, 15 play drives, or even in college, the same way, 10, 11, 12 play drives. And these receivers will go out and in, out and in, out and in. He's like, I want to play the whole drive so I can moderate my speed on my routes. So maybe some routes he knows if he runs it like a 4.6 type of receiver, he can still get open. And maybe the that's causing some more of the contested situations. It can also be added to his yards per run being so damn low, which is another thing that's making him dump in the Twitter rankings. That's I love Fusuvu, but one thing that he definitely gets take lock on is this yards per run. If this guy's got bad yards per run, he is dead to Fusuvu. And that's Keon Coleman and Adonai Mitchell. But Adonai Mitchell is a guy that, like I said, he is a professional gamer. There's a reason that comps have come out. Like I mentioned before, George Pickens, who George Pickens played with Adonai, and George Pickens alluded to Adonai as the next thing at Georgia a few years ago when he was coming out. CeeDee Lamb, you've seen those comps. He's got a little Mike Evans to his game, not the dominance, but a little bit there in the length as well. He's a very good wide receiver that I think is getting too much negativity pushed towards him because of, like I said before, unexpected that he was going to be this fast. So people are like, why didn't we see it on film? Two, a little bit scrawny, three yards per out run. And that's three things people can latch on to very hard. And it's pulling him down and outside of people's top tens.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's like the new narrative is we're getting punished for how fast he ran at the combine. But one guy that I think is getting a little bit overly punished was Keon Coleman. And I think I'm a little bit ahead. I think I might be a little bit ahead on him than you, Cody. You know, I haven't compared our rankings with him, but I just I know Matty Kiwum has a little bit of has labeled the guy potential bust. There's some people that say Keon Coleman can't separate at the NFL level. I see Keon Coleman as a big outside receiver that outscored Jaden Reed at Michigan State in terms of fantasy production. And this is a guy that we've seen take over games at Florida State. He had the big three touchdown performance against LSU. He's got physical size on the outside. And I think that the 40 was a little bit deceiving because I don't think anybody should have ever expected him to be a burner. And he had a very solid 10-yard split. You know, so when you put into context, the 10-yard split is basically just how fast you run the first 10 yards of the 40.
Yeah.
Keon Coleman was up there, but the overall 40 was one of the slower ones in context to a very, very fast class of wide receivers. But Keon Coleman now, I don't think the NFL teams are going to sink him. I think he's going to be a top 45 pick with potential to sneak in the end of the first round. But I think there's a lot of fantasy analysts who don't like Keon Coleman. I think it's very all over the place, much like Adonai Mitchell. Where are you at on Coleman? Do you think that the hate is warranted? And, you know, maybe the potential for bust there? Like, where are you at?
I think there's a key thing you brought up there. That was he ran, one of the slowest 40s among a faster class. And the grouping here, I found the tweet. This was the fastest class in NFL Combine history dating back to 2000. The average 40 was 4.44. Dating back to 2009 being the next closest at 4.46. So we did keep looking up at that number and being like, damn, these guys are quick. And then Keon runs at 4.61. So there's a little bit of an inflation there to be like, man, this guy's slow as hell. You didn't run a 4.74. You ran a 4.61. The grains, the millisecond that changes that from a 4.61 to a 4.59 is viewed in an entirely different way. Alex calls it like the Costco effect. It's like, well, is it $10 or is it $9.99? People perceive those two numbers vastly different. And that's something that is getting pushed into the Keon Coleman thing. Also high expectations. We saw not only on film, but like live last season, like, dude, dirty catches. Oh my God. One-handed across the middle. Oh my God. Contested in the end zone. And so your expectation is sky high. And then you come in here and you're looking at Marv and you're looking at Malik and you're looking at Rome. And you're like, well, he's not on that level, so he sucks. But it's a really good receiver class. And Coleman just so happens to not be Randy Moss. He just so happens to not be Terrell Owens. Like, he could be a really good wide receiver. He is a really good wide receiver. Allen Robinson had 1,400 yards in Jacksonville with Blake Bortles 1 year. This receiver in Keon Coleman's better than Allen Robinson was in 2014. There's no reason he can't have a similar output. You're getting a value on him. And again, we brought up with Adonai Mitchell a minute ago. Fusuvu, if he's listening to this, isn't going to be happy. It's the same two guys that Fusu's been pushing down because of yards per route run, which is a very translatable statistic into fantasy football and success in the NFL. However, it's not a 100%er.
Yeah, definitely interesting players right now. We need to get to the NFL draft, Cody, because I think right when we see like where these guys are actually drafted, we're going to have to adjust on the fly, because I think that both these guys are going to be super appealing, and a lot of the haters, I think, are going to kind of walk it back a little bit. I'm so excited about this class, and I know you are as well. The name of the show, we're talking about our must draft rookies. And when we say must draft rookies, it'd be really easy for Cody and I to say, go draft Caleb Williams, go draft Marvin Harrison, go draft Rome Odunze, go draft Brock Bowers. But at the end of the day, draft capital matters, for our rookie draft. Rookie draft capital matters, ADP matters. We're looking at players in the context of value, where we think you're going to be able to get them as well. So we came up with a list of five players each, and we're just going to go back and forth here. Cody, the floor is yours. You already gave us Will Shipley, so why don't you talk a little bit more about Will Shipley, where you think people are going to have to be taking him in their rookie drafts, and a little bit more about what you love about him as a player.
I think the Will Shipley, and we talked about him a lot a minute ago, so I'm not going to cover too much air on him, but right now you're getting him in a couple of last rounds in underdog, specifically running back 65 off the board. I just don't think that the helium has hit Shipley yet, and what it has, it's not enough to be a bump to get himself into the conversation of, I know for a fact that this archetype of a running back is going to get he's going to get the pound of the table on draft night on day two, late third round. People are going to be like, man, I want this kid. You're going to see a couple running backs go. People come back, yeah, but Shipley. Like, whether it's Baltimore, whether it's KC, it could be any of these teams, these good teams that could end up with a Shipley. He's a guy that translates well to the NFL. The athleticism's there. We've seen it in the receiving game, the high-end pedigree, great off the field, succeeded at Clemson. Yes, he didn't have 2,000 yards, 2,000 total yards like a McCaffrey, but neither did Kyron Williams. Kyron Williams actually went a 4.65. So I kind of like him as a better juiced-up version of Kyron Williams that's going to earn opportunities and just be a sick value. And it's right now draft capital, you're looking at getting him in the third round of these fantasy drafts because people just don't care right now. They don't know quite about Shipley. So you're getting him in the late third rounds of rookie drafts. But I don't think it's going to end up that way.
I agree with you. I think he'll be a second round pick. But Cody, if the Kansas City Chiefs take Will Shipley and put him in the Jerick McKinnon role, wheels up, man. You're talking about high second round rookie pick. That'll correct itself very quickly. For me, I'm going to stay with a high pedigree guy. I think when we talk about the tail end of the first round, Ladd McConkey, for me, this is a player that I think is Christian Kirk with potential for more. And I'm getting that sort of floor in my rookie drafts where even if Ladd McConkey is drafted, let's say he goes in that sweet spot at the end of the first round, that 25 through 32 range, I still don't see him steaming up and being drafted ahead of like whoever the RB1 is and a couple of these other wide receivers like the Brian Thomases, the Xavier Worthies. But I think Ladd McConkey is going to have multiple seasons where he averages like 14 points per game for my fantasy teams. And if it all clicks, we've seen these kind of magical seasons from these high target potential guys. And I think Ladd McConkey has that in his range of outcomes. So if I can get Ladd McConkey anywhere in like the 111, 112, 201 range in my rookie drafts, whether it's super flex or single QB, I am all over him at that range. Ladd McConkey is definitely in sort of must draft rookie range for me.
No, I'm going to go to Ray Davis from Kentucky. Ray Davis is a guy that we've looked at the rookie drafts of the last 5, 6, 7 years and seeing the archetypes of what hits and what doesn't hit. And more often than not, it's the running backs that you want to be stashing on your dynasty rosters. And Ray Davis, who turns 25 this year, is the one that you're going to be able to be drafting, hopefully in the fifth round of your rookie drafts. If you don't have five rounds, you draft him in the fourth, whatever. But in the NFL draft, I don't foresee him going any earlier than the fifth specifically. Hopefully he's a six-round pick that will earn opportunities, will make a roster, and like we talked about earlier, will be one of the next guys in line come week 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and Ray Davis is the 40% fab guy. That's going to be him, and you want to have him stashed on that dynasty roster. He's a running back that has a bull's mindset, a bull running style. And by that, I'm thinking Jerick McKinnon type. That's one of my favorite comps for him is Jerick McKinnon. Alex thinks it's kind of goofy because Jerick McKinnon is a little more athletic. Alex is Ray Rice, but I don't comp Rays to Rays. That's not how I roll. Ray Davis is not Ray Rice. I like Jerick McKinnon. Jerick McKinnon, a little more athletic, of course, ran low 4.4s. Ray Davis 4.52. I think he's going to be a very good pro, 5'8", 220. Just a good pure rusher at the Senior Bowl this year. Late fifth, late fourth, whatever your draft has, that's where you're going to take Ray Davis, and you're going to be happy about it, like I said, in November of this year.
I love it, Cody. And it's funny because you would think that there'd be a little more buzz on a guy who had back-to-back double-digit rushing touchdown seasons in the SEC. He just did it for like the wrong SEC school. If he would have done that for like Auburn instead of Kentucky and Vanderbilt, I think people would kind of be like losing their mind a little bit. So I know there's a lot of people who really like Ray Davis. I'm glad to see you're on him. I'll give you a running back who I really am into. And again, we're talking about at cost. And this is a player that I think is going to be drafted in the NFL, maybe in the sixth round. Maybe he sneaks in the fifth. Maybe he's a seventh rounder. But I think he will be drafted this month in the NFL draft. And that's Kamani Vidal. Cody brought up how Kamani Vidal performed at the Senior Bowl. Kamani Vidal also really backed it up at the NFL Combine. I was actually pretty surprised by how well he performed at the Combine. But you're talking about a guy who had a 107 speed score. And that's really a weight-adjusted 40. But when we start seeing guys get north of 100 on the speed scores, that's really a positive sign. And Kamani Vidal ran a 4.46 at 213 pounds. I think 4.46 was a huge win for him. 213, I think, was a win for him. But this is a player at 1,600 rushing yards at Troy last year. I believe he had 1,100-plus the year before. This is a productive back from a slightly smaller school that backed it up at the Combine. I think Kamani Vidal is really, really interesting. I've kind of been following the teams interested in him. I don't be shocked if the Chargers draft him on day three. There's a little bit of buzz there. And I think if that happens, just like you said, Will Shipley to Kansas City, people are going to push Kamani Vidal into the third round. But if you're doing a pre-NFL draft rookie draft, which I know there's some of you out there doing that, Kamani Vidal, you can get him like in like the fourth, fifth round. So, you know, the steam has not there. And he's a 20th round dart throw on Underdog right now. Even like Ray Davis, you're probably using like an 18th rounder on Underdog. Kamani Vidal, 20th round, sitting there for you.
Another running back, my third one here. And last one, Tyron Tracy Jr. from Purdue. Doesn't exist on Underdog right now. So Underdog, if you're listening, please do your job. Please go add Tyron Tracy to your Underdog ADPs because you can't draft him. He ain't going to have an ADP. And I promise you he's not going to get drafted last. Because he's coming out of Purdue, and he's another one that he kind of reminds me of the Rashad White archetype, a guy that was down there at the Shrine Bowl this year in Frisco. There's a group of guys from the Shrine Bowl this year. He, Frank Gore Jr., Jaden Sheridan, Blake Watson, guys that succeeded down there and are going to make it into the NFL and make it onto a roster. And Tracy just happens to be the top of that food chain because the athleticism was there. 4.48 in the 40-yard dash. He comes in north of 205, Trey Mason-Dixon line at 209 pounds. He has the receiving chops. He didn't have a 1,000-yard season on the ground at Purdue, but he did the job. He got the things done. He had a respectable team production of 20%. And like I said before, he reminds me of a Rashad White archetype, and that excites me just first off because someone I saw in person at the Senior Bowl was Rashad White, and before the Senior Bowl that year, I had him as running back three, and I just sat there and drooled in Mobile over Rashad. And I kind of found myself, you know, looking at Jaden Sheridan, looking at Blake Watson, looking at Deshaun Fenwick from Oregon State, and Frank Gore and his soft hands, But it always came back to Tyrann Tracy, and then the testing came through. Tyrann Tracy is a guy that could sneak himself into that. I mentioned before, top eight conversation of all these teams all have a different RB1. Wouldn't be surprised if Tyrann Tracy's name isn't up into that top three conversation for a lot of teams.
Yeah, and I'll give a hat tip to you and Matty Kiwoom for kind of getting me, you know, opening my mind to Tracy. But the more and more you dive into him, I think there's more and more positives. And guys, circle the name Tyrann Tracy. Not on Underdog. This is a guy that's under the radar right now. Take every opportunity to add him in those early startups and kind of get ahead of your league. Cody and Maddie collectively are both really high on this guy. And for me, I'm going to go with Marshawn Lloyd. And again, I'm going with a little higher pedigree guy here, but I love Marshawn Lloyd. I love his journey. This was a player that traveled from Delaware to DeMatha Catholic in Maryland, 2-hour commute every day as a high school player to get more exposure, to get to that highest level, goes to South Carolina, could have gone to a couple of, you know, South Carolina, of course, SEC level school. A lot of guys transferred out of South Carolina, Cody, in this class. That's an interesting little subplot here, but goes to South Carolina, has a big injury as a freshman, torn ACL, comes back, has double digit touchdowns, then transfers to USC. The metrics last year at USC in his 1 year for the Trojans, very, very high yards per carry, very, very high yards per reception. We had him up there in Player Profiler, sort of as like a top like six-ish, top seven running back. But after the Senior Bowl, you know, he was arguably the best running back down in Mobile, then backs it up at the Combine, 220 pounds, runs a 4.46 40. That's big time, 111 speed score. I think that he projects as a starting running back in the NFL. I think he's going to be drafted on day two. And I think there's certain teams, like Cody said, that are having Marshawn Lloyd as their RB1 in the class. But because the position is so beat up, and because I think Trey Benson, he earned it at the Combine, but because Trey Benson is sort of everybody's RB1 now, even if Marshawn Lloyd is drafted in the third round, I still think you're going to be able to get him in the second round of your rookie drafts. And I think he can provide big-time value and give you multiple RB2 seasons in his career.
I love Marshawn. The only question I have is, man, he was such a Devy sweetheart. We loved him young at South Carolina, and he kind of follows in the footsteps of Kevin Harris, who hasn't really panned out in New England. He isn't there anymore, but was a Devy sweetheart, transferred to USC, like you said, from USC, actually coast to coast. Ran the 4.46, which I did love. Great upper body. I'm just going to mention
Talk about his calves, Cody.
I'm just going to mention it one more time. This isn't my thought. This is coming from Byron Lambert. Byron says, you got to worry about the Darren McFadden corollary. The Darren McFadden corollary is the slender calves with the monstrous upper body. And Theo, you work out, I work out. The upper body is definitely easier to pump, I guess they would say. And he definitely has the pump in the upper body. Traps, the biceps, the triceps, the delts, the abs.
What?
Keep naming them, right? But when he doesn't have calves. He doesn't have the calves. He's got the sprinter calves. He's got the long distance calves. That's what he has. He's the cross country calves. So that's a question mark. But I think as far as being a pure runner, he may be the best pure rusher in the class. The change of direction is uncanny and disgusting. But I'm going to move to my number four guy. My favorite receiver in the class. Still, he's getting some respect, and there's some people that are very quiet, very low-key on my guy from Central Florida, Javon Baker. Javon Baker is dirt nasty. I think his suddenness in and out of breaks is at a high level, second to few in this class. Transferred from Alabama as a four-star to Central Florida, was all Big 12 wide receiver, averaged north of 20 yards per reception this past year. That's what they needed him to do. It's how he worked. He had another receiver in that offense, played well as John Rhys Plumlee, the quarterback in this draft class. Javon Baker reminds me of Rashee Rice. He reminds me of Stephon Diggs. Diggs, of course, was a five-star prospect out of Maryland, hurt his leg, went in the fourth round of the NFL draft. I think Javon Baker is going to go somewhere around that same area, late third, early fourth. I'd love to see it higher, but I don't think he will be late fourth, early fourth, likely. Late third, early fourth is likely. And I think what that does in the fantasy football side of things, if the landing spot is right, I've labeled him Mr. 206. If I'm at the 206, 207, 208, I'm taking him. I don't care. It's my guy. I feel good about it. But there's going to be drafts where you're going to be playing around third round, 304, 305, 306 people that don't know who Javon Baker is. And like, who the hell is this Javon Baker cat that's now the wide receiver three in Miami? Or, you know, or who's this Javon Baker cat that's going to replace X with the New York Giants? Like, and it's going to be him. And you're going to want to go out and draft that guy. So Javon Baker, that's my favorite receiver in the whole class.
Yeah, and I saw how highly you have him ranked in your overall rankings. Cody has a ton of conviction on Javon Baker. You bring up the third round. I think, you know, if he gets the third round draft capital, that's a huge win. Saw Tank Dell, saw Josh Downs excel as rookies out of that third round. Certainly a couple of day three guys did it last year. Shout out Puka Nacua. So, yeah, Javon Baker, let's root for him to get into that third round. Cody's going to be all hyped about that at the draft house if that happens. And I'll stay at the wide receiver spot. And, Cody, it's a little funny because this was a player that I didn't think I'd have to talk about him kind of being a value, but it's Roman Wilson. Roman Wilson, you and Matty Kiwum, you know, Senior Bowl, post-Senior Bowl, we saw like a bump with Roman Wilson. This was a guy that, you know, was all but dominant down in Mobile, tore up the opposing cornerbacks, and had a ton of steam. Then there was a little bit of the hype train with Roman Wilson, where Roman Wilson is going to go to the combine and he's going to run the fastest 40. He's going to have the best shuttle. Roman Wilson ends up not participating in a few drills. I got to think maybe he was a little banged up. Runs the 40 at 4.41, and it's like the least amount of enthusiasm for a 4.41 40 guy ever. I think that the expectations were there that he was just going to run so fast that people were like, you know, whatever, Roman Wilson. And now there's all these wide receivers that have sort of like passed him by. Rookie drafts, I'm continually seeing him available at like the 2-3 turn in Superflex rookie drafts, where I think Roman Wilson, that'll correct itself after the NFL draft. But I'm in a dynasty startup now with a bunch of the fantasy points guys and a couple other people. Alfredo Brown's in that one. But I got Roman Wilson late in this dynasty startup, like way behind a lot of these other rookie wide receivers. And I'm like, Roman Wilson has somehow just become a value. It's like people, we get so much information coming at us, Cody, that people kind of forget the Senior Bowl. But if you talk about like a great indicator of future fantasy football success, it's a dominant Senior Bowl performance at the wide receiver spot. You saw it last year with guys like Puka Nacua, Tank Dell. You've seen it in years past with guys like Deebo Samuel. If when guys come out and do it in Mobile, you largely see those guys kind of being successful, and a lot of them as rookies. And I think Roman Wilson is that. I think he'll end up still being a second round pick. And I think his floor is a third round pick in the NFL draft.
Theo, I feel 100% in line with everything you said, except I'm very disappointed you did not bring up the fact that Roman Wilson also traveled pretty far every single day to school. He flew. He didn't drive in Maryland traffic. He flew on an airplane to school from island to island in Hawaii. I thought that was pretty wild.
Well, Cody, I know you're down in Virginia now. You know about this traffic. And this is a good question for the chat. Would you rather get on a plane and fly from a Hawaiian island to a Hawaiian island, or would you rather sit in 95 traffic going through Delaware traffic, which is AKA some Philly type traffic, then Baltimore traffic, then DC traffic, all in every single morning? I mean, that's Cody. I'd rather get in a plane than sit on that 2-hour car ride. So, 100%. Yeah, definitely. But shout out to both these guys. We love seeing these sort of stories about perseverance. Both of these guys, you know, really put it in to get that exposure in high school. It's wild times, but it's paying off for both of them. And I will pass it over to you for your last guy.
And my last guy is going to be kind of we circled the wagons here back to the depth of this wide receiver room, this wide receiver class in 2024. I talked about a numerous number of guys in the 30s that I think are going to be rosterable in the NFL. I don't know about fantasy, but in the NFL. But my running back, or one of my wide receivers that's around the 20 range, is Malik Washington. And Malik Washington actually was the top of the food chain in college football this year in receptions and receiving yards at Virginia. 50% of his receiving yards come after the catch. I always have to read that very slowly because I want to say 50% target share. No, 50% of his receiving yards came after the catch. He forced 35 missed tackles. I think he's arguably the most dominant receiver in this class. pound for pound in 2023 with Neighbors, Odunze, and him, Malik Washington. Those are the three most dominant receivers in college football in 2023. And I know people are going to say, Marv was No, Marv was not dominant like that. These guys were a different level of dominant. Troy Franklin, you could almost put in the conversation, but these three dudes were dominant. And Malik was one that he's 5'8", he's 205, 210, but people are like, doesn't matter because he's small. Doesn't matter because of this. Doesn't matter. He's going to play in the slot. He's going to be dynamic. He's a running. Really, what he is, he's a running back playing slot with great hands, tackle breaking ability. He's not Deebo Samuel, but he's also not Frank Gore Jr. He's a mixture of these two guys. He's a brutal. Really, what he is, he's a brutal receiver as far as after the catch, and he's just going to get the job done. And it's going to be a guy you're going to be able to get very late. 46% of his team's production this year. He broke out at age 20 at Virginia, ran a 4.47. Like I said, though, 5'8", 197. Who cares? Who cares? He's better than DeMario Douglas, and we loved DeMario Douglas.
I love it. I love your Malik Washington take. That's definitely a guy I'm into. I'm really glad to see you're so high on him. Again, Cody's rankings, those are dropping very, very soon over at Player Profile, our rookie guide, which is coming any day now. I'm gonna finish it out. I'm going to go with the tight end position, and it's Ben Sinnott of Kansas State. This is a guy that, you know, I liked before the NFL draft, but it was really eye-opening to me, the testing numbers for him. He actually ran a faster 40 than Jatavion Sanders. Guy runs a 4.68 40. He had the highest vertical of any tight end in the class. Really, really stood out. And then when you dive into what he did at Kansas State, leads Kansas State in receiving yards, leads Kansas State in receiving touchdowns. I think that he's a guy that is challenging for tight end two in this class. And I think that this is a player that has big-time potential in fantasy football. He had a very high average depth of target last year, Kansas State as well. This was not just some guy getting, you know, targets right around the line of scrimmage. He was able to make plays downfield. He's an exciting player, and I think he kind of fits into this 6'4 kind of tight end that we've seen a lot of these guys kind of have this success recently, whether it's Sam Laporta, whether it's Evan Engram, Dalton Kincaid, Trey McBride, sort of this new prototype tight end. I think Sinnott finishes, you know, kind of compares favorably to some of those guys. So just a quick recap of our 10 players, must draft players. Cody's guys were Will Shipley of Clemson, a running back, Ray Davis, running back out of Kentucky, Tyrone Tracy, a running back out of Purdue, Javon Baker, UCF, after being an Alabama Crimson Tide wide receiver, and then Malik Washington, UVA wide receiver, after being a Northwestern wide receiver. And for me, it's Ladd McConkey, Georgia wide receiver, Kamani Vidal, a running back out of Troy State, Marshawn Lloyd, running back out of USC, Roman Wilson, wide receiver, Michigan, and Ben Sinnott, tight end, Kansas State. Cody, I told you I'd have you in here for 55 minutes. You dropped so much fire that it's almost an hour and 25 minutes in. You were so generous with your time. I love chopping it up with you. Let everybody know where they can find your work.
You can go find most of my work over at rosterwatch.com. And for those that love to be tapped in, go to thedraftrankings.com, thedraftrankings.com. You can come support the new venture, which is the Draft Rankings podcast, The Hurdle, on the Executives of Fantasy Football YouTube channel. Just go find everything over at thedraftrankings.com. It's much appreciated, much loved. And Theo, thank you again.
Yeah, for sure. And you can check out The Hurdle right here on Player Profiler YouTube. And check out Cody. Cody's we're going to be crushing it down in the draft. So it's a couple weeks out, but you don't need to watch ESPN. You don't need to watch the NFL Network. Stick with us at Player Profiler. We're going to give you the best coverage that you can get for fantasy football and also for the NFL. We have such a good group of guys down in that house. We're going to be getting after for three straight days. It's going to be a lot of fun. Stick with us here at Press Coverage. I'm going to be bringing one or two more shows before the NFL draft with this sort of focus. We're going to try to get you prepared for this rookie class. Stick with us at Player Profiler. We got you covered, and we'll see you soon.
Hey, I want to take a moment to thank you for tuning in. It's important to me that all of our media be free. This is only possible because of you, allowing a true independent sports media enterprise to thrive unlike any other in the business. So please subscribe to the All In Package to continue to make all this possible, to ensure that all of our stats, information, data, content is available to you, especially you, the people that get the site and get the show.